On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
He struck him out. Would you like fries with that? 12 in a row for the crew. 12-5, your final. The Brewers with their second longest winning streak in the regular season in franchise history. A team for the ages, the 2025 Milwaukee Brewers, and they are not even close to being done yet.
How about a great call from Lane Grindle as we open the program on Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. Yep, you've heard it by now. If you haven't, you've been living under a rock. Free burgers. Brewers have done it 12 in a row, third time since this promotion has existed, from our friends at George Webb Restaurants. And again, the reminder, it's not today, it's not tomorrow. Like, if you were somebody that walked in there trying to get one today, I apologize. You didn't know that it was not happening today. There are logistics involved and all this sort of thing. But there are a couple ways that you can redeem your free burgers. First and foremost, you can get a voucher. Okay, you don't have to just go on the day. So you can get a voucher starting this Friday, and you can get a free burger that can be redeemed anytime between August 25th and 29th. That being said, if you don't want to get the voucher and you want to go to the event and sit and wait and enjoy our friends at George Webb, that is going to be on August 20th, all locations from 2 to 6. All right? So August 20th, next Wednesday, from 2 to 6, free burger, no voucher needed. Or you can pick up a voucher starting on Friday to be used August 25th through 29th. All right? Now you're all set on the burgers. Let's talk some ball here, shall we? We got a few segments coming on here as well. 12 in a row. They're playing so great. We'll talk about some of the performances within this 12-game streak. We will talk a little bit about the playoffs, a little bit about the schedule and what all this means for the Brewers, because a reminder about some of the funky and wonkiness that goes into playoff scheduling. We'll talk about the little things. I'll also play the conversation I had with Joey Ortiz for Brewers warm-up on Saturday. I know that conversation isn't podcasted, so I want to put that here in the podcast feed for folks to listen. I tweeted this video earlier today about Joey's defense, and hear from the man himself. He made some great plays over the weekend, so I wanted to talk to him about some defense as well. And then we're also going to have a segment here coming up in a moment. Let's get ahead of ourselves, right? Let's take 5 minutes to talk about how good this team's playing and what it could mean for the crew. Real quick at the top as well. Cubs, they played a day game today against the Blue Jays. It was a heck of a game. And it was, you know, in the words of Vin Scully, they played like they were double parked. And it was a pitcher's duel. Max Scherzer was great. Matthew Boyd was great. Vlad Guerrero Jr. got a hanging breaking ball for a two-run shot to make it 2-1. Cubs had an opportunity in the eighth inning with runners on second and third and nobody out. Happ struck out. Tucker struck out. Kelly struck out. And that was your ball game. So we'll talk a little bit about the Cubs later on, but the division lead is up to 8 games as you get ready for the Cincinnati Reds tomorrow night. We'll talk about them at the very end of the program. But yesterday, another win, 12-5, the final. And it was tight in the middle of this contest, 6-5 at one point. Brian Reynolds, my goodness, take a day off for once, my guy. But the Brewers bounced right back and scored 6 more unanswered to coast to this one against the Pirates. Sal Frelick, you know, he's been at the center of all this. And a funny tidbit about this is that Sal's dad is a huge Pittsburgh Pirates fan. I know people all assume, like, oh, Boston guy, he's Red Sox through and through. Like, Sal is, but his dad is a huge Pittsburgh guy and explained, hey, this is just kind of fun to keep winning. But Sal is also making the point about this team of just, it's a large enough sample that they expect this.
There's obviously that feel to it, but at the same time, like, we expect to play this way, to prepare for in the offseason, prepare for in spring training, like, never coming into a season not thinking we're, you know, going to win every game. You know, it's just our mindset. You know, it's kind of expected.
I mean, to have an 11 game and then, you know, have a good stretch and then a 12 game, you know, within 2 months of each other is pretty nuts for the Brewers right now. And then furthermore, you know, Brandon Woodruff, did anybody doubt that he was going to pitch well in 4 innings of shutout ball? And this was a short start by design. More on that in a moment. But just the formula and how this keeps working.
Now it's getting guys on, taking walks, stealing bases, hitting runs, and then we got guys who can hit the homer. So, I mean, it's we're doing everything and the right way, and we're playing hard, and you can see the energy from everybody in the dugout, guys interacting with each other. No, it's been fun, man. I'm just happy to be a part of it, and just trying to keep stringing together some wins.
When you look at the Brewers yesterday, and I tweeted this stat as well, the Brewers, yesterday was their 44th game in which they did not hit a home run. They are the only team in baseball with an above 500 record in games in which they don't hit a home run. 23-21. Pretty impressive stuff. To still score 12 runs, right? And on the heels of shutting out the Pirates 14-0 with all those homers, to then score 12 more without the benefit of a homer. That's a dynamic offense. And we were talking, my hand up is here as well. My hand up included, they need more slug. They need to get more of this trade deadline. Like, they knew. They totally knew. Best offense in baseball since May 25th. The numbers don't lie. And they keep on rolling. Now, on Woodruff, people were panicking. Why did he only go four? Oh my gosh, 60-some pitches. Did he pull something when he was covering first base? That was a nifty play, mind you. Totally fine. Everything was as scheduled. It was supposed to be a shorter start. Hear from Woody in his own words.
Yeah, I think all around, that was probably the first time I've gone on, I call it a five-day cycle, in about 2 years. So it was a little bit of an adjustment for me in between with the routine of getting ready. And, yeah, I mean, that extra day matters for me. And but I knew what to look forward to this time around, so I was prepared for it. And I think all in all, kind of the game, there's an off day, the bullpen was full. I think it was just kind of a smart decision in that sense, but body-wise, I was fine. I mean, it's just this is new territory for me. Haven't thrown in 2 years essentially, and now starting to get a good load under me. These are necessary games for me to really learn about myself and how I can, you know, push it when I need to push it with the velo and just how the body's responding. So, positive day, but yeah, I felt fine. It was just kind of just one of those days where it was just kind of monitoring everything.
So they're being smart with him. He will get to make his next start most likely with that extra day of rest. More on that later on in the show. But they've won 12 in a row. It's a happy off day, a happy flight to Cincinnati. Sal Frelick describing the vibe of this team.
Again, it's so loose right now, and you know, like tit over and over again. But you know, one guy gets out, it's just like the next guy's going to pick you up. So there's no pressure at all, especially you know, 1-9.
And he had himself quite the week. And some others. Let's talk about some of those performances in this 12-game winning streak coming up next. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Back after this on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Let's talk about how great these 12 games have been. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Let's get to the hotline right now. Doug and Baraboo. Doug, you're live on Brewers Weekly.
Good evening, Dom. Another fun week. My wife and I, we're 19-9 attending games. We're having a lot of fun. My question and comments are, I'm looking forward to Cheerio returning. And with the greatest respect of everybody that's filled in for him. And my comment and question involves all the talk we heard about when Vaughn came in and Pat Murphy, you know, saying, do not chase. And obviously he's not chasing. I wonder if Cheerio is watching that. You're there every day. And is that something he'll pick up on? Or do you think Pat Murphy has to talk to him, or you think it's just natural he'll be fine?
I also remind you, Doug, I appreciate the call and the text. First, on the injury front, he'll be back by the end of the month. He's running at 75% right now. The Brewers do expect him back at the end of the month. Now, secondly, on the plate discipline thing and everything like that, I want to remind folks about where we're at with Jackson Cheerio and in comparison to Andrew Vaughn. So Andrew Vaughn was a junior in college in 21 years old. Like, Jackson Cheerio's in his second year in the big leagues, right? It's just, the development happens in different paces for everybody. Jackson was a freak as a 16-year-old and grew into his body. He's still got growing to do. He's going to learn. Like, he is going to learn plate discipline. That being said, he had been walking more until that injury, and walks, quite frankly, you know, I think he's understanding at the time teams were pitching around him because he was hot and trying to attack, you know, some of the guys that they don't know, maybe, perhaps, and Yelly was a little bit in a weird stretch. Then he got hot again. So the point being, when Churio comes back to this lineup, there's nowhere to hide. And I think he's going to get a lot of strikes, and he's going to learn his lesson. And in regard specifically to Vaughn, it's not like, you know, the guy arrives and Pat Murphy says, swing at pitches out of the zone less. Like, everybody knows that. But that's the motto of the Brewers. Swing at strikes, take balls. And it's, some guys listen, some guys don't. And the guys that listen stick around. And that's how the Brewers try to build their clubs. Appreciate the call there, Doug. Let's talk a little bit about some of the statistical anomalies and how good this team has been over this 12 in a row. Real quick, off the top of your head, who's got the most homers in this 12-game winning streak? Real quick. Think about it. Think about it. Ding, time's up. Bryce Terang's got 6 homers in the 12-game streak. Leads the team by far. We've talked about this development of power for Bryce. We've talked about the bat speed. We've talked about, yes, the strikeout lever has gone up. And I know maybe some of the fans of thinking, oh my gosh, this team never strikes out. They strike out. Like, Yelly's striking out more than he ever has, but he's also exchanged that for production. I use this comparison a lot that, you know, any general manager would talk about, but it's levers, okay? If you want to change a player, levers correspond with each other. Generally, when you're adding bat speed, which means you're adding potential for power, which means you're adding potential for slug, you're also, by happenstance, initially going to raise the chance for strikeouts. Now, the best hitters, as they develop and grow and understand how pitchers are attacking them, can slowly pull that strikeout lever down. But I think situationally, Bryce Terang has been phenomenal all season long. And the reason I bring this up, when you look at it with runners in scoring position, Terang is still in the top 5 in baseball for his production with runners in scoring position. Let me read you his line here real quick from our friends at Baseball Reference. With RISP, he is hitting .347 with a .398 on base. He's got 12 walks and only 20 strikeouts in 119 plate appearances. That is better than his season strikeout rate. His BABIP is .393. He's putting the ball in play. He's getting damage. He's got 41 ribbies, obviously, in such situations. Even with men on, he's hitting .315. So he's been phenomenal so far, and obviously in this stretch. There are 5 guys that have had at least 25 plate appearances in this 12-game winning streak that have an OPS over 1,000 during the streak. They are Bryce Terang, Isaac Collins, William Contreras, Christian Yelich, and Sal Frelick. Now, I would tell you, at the start of the year, 4 of these 5 names, you're thinking, yes, that's where your offense needs to come from. Now, Isaac Collins, we'll talk about him a little bit in the next segment, but one rookie of the month for July. He was on pace to do it already here in August, but he's about to hopefully head to paternity leave here soon. I know his wife, Isabella, is expecting their first child, so congratulations to the Collins family when that day comes. But, man, he's got dad strength coming now, too. That's super exciting. Other team leaders offensively, Joey Ortiz has got 7 doubles, and he leads the team with a .391 batting average over this 12-game winning streak. Don't look now. Joey O's getting hot. He was my pick to click. Obviously, didn't click in the first 2.5 months of the year, but the sooner he gets back to a league average output, that's one of the best 9 hitters in the game right there, man. That is super useful to have. He had that great series against the Mets. Then on the pitching side, Freddie Peralta made 2 starts. I know it was only 11 innings, you know, a 5 and a 6, only 1 earned run. And that was that really frustrating game in Atlanta. And when we talk about, like, that's his floor now, where he walks 3 or 4, whatever, and hit a batter, but he only allowed 1 run. Like, that's Freddie Peralta's floor now. Appreciate that. Woody's got 20 strikeouts across his 3 starts. Abney Uribe, 5 scoreless innings and 4 holds. Firing all cylinders, man. No wonder you're getting some crazy good performances in this 12-game winning streak. It's no surprise. But to actually put it down on paper, it's like, whoa! No wonder. Pretty crazy. The Reds are next. Now, the next segment, I'm going to call, let's get ahead of ourselves. Let's get excited. Let's, for 5 minutes, just, you know, kind of desensitize ourselves to talking about, oh, is it okay to talk about it? Or can we talk about the World Series? Like, let's do it. Let's go there. For 5 minutes, coming up on the other side of the break on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
couple of texts that have come in here as we talk a little excitement for the Brewers winning 12 in a row. I'm Dom Catronio. We wasted so much breath earlier in the season talking about Adames and no clubhouse guy. We just needed to wait a bit to find that guy. And his role and his name is Sal Frelick. I've seen it all season, but this last weekend he really showed it. After Friday's play at the plate, he was the first one in Perkins' face, gassing him up. Yep, he said some expletives there that I cannot say on the radio that I really loved. Of course, the biting of the helmet thing in the dugout, that was pretty funny. That was actually inspired by Brandon Woodruff, and Woody actually joked that that's now his phone background, the photo of Sal after the game on Tuesday. It's not just him, but all the young guys and the veterans are building an amazing culture, supporting each other. It's amazing to see what they're doing. I'd also throw in Freddie Peralta in that mix, too. I know it's hard for a starting pitcher to be considered like a clubhouse guy. Him and Woody, like, they're him, and obviously Yelly. Yelly's the constant. But this is, honestly, like, I've been covering this team for 5 years. Yeah, this is the best one. I really do think so. You know, I last year's was really good. But to think that this one's just as good, if not better, that's shocking. Now, winning helps with that, too. Nemo from Madison. One thing the national media is not talking about this team is how well their old-school small ball plays in cold, windy October outdoor games. Do home runs matter in the postseason? Yes. But what do you do if you only hit homers and the wind's blowing in on a 45-degree October Tuesday night at Wrigley? It's a very good point. I really like that. We'll bring that up once we get that first fall twinge in the air. But I sweated through my shorts playing golf today, so I can't even wait for fall right now. Another text: I've seen and heard a lot about what's going to happen, who's going to play where, and what do we do in 26. I'm not going to tell anyone how to fan, but I'm going to enjoy 2025 and deal with 2026 in January. Here's to the dog days of summer and the greatest game in the world. Cheers. I agree, and that's what I tell everybody right now, man. Like, I was playing golf with a longtime Brewer fan today, and, like, you know, just the memories of 08, and we were talking about that and just how much fun that team was, and CC being in the building for that. You think you're never going to see a season like that again. And 2011, right, so great. And then maybe an older generation of fans will tell you about, man, that 92 team, it deserved a better fate. You know, if the rules were today, that team could have won the World Series. Or obviously we hear a lot about 82. Not a lot of people talk about how fun it was for 81's team as well to finally break through and get into the postseason. So seasons like this don't grow on trees, especially being the best record in baseball by a long shot. Again, I'm not going to tell you how to fan. We'll have the October conversation when it comes. Enjoy this, man. Just enjoy this. Go to a ballpark. Get yourself a t-shirt. Because again, these don't grow on trees. You've got to appreciate it. Oh no, the window's wide open. We'll go next. And you don't know that. You don't know that. They haven't been in the CS since 2018. This is a really darn good chance to do it. That leads me into our, let's get ahead of ourselves here. I got four things I want to talk about here. First of all, let's get ahead of ourselves. The Brewers are on pace to get home field advantage for the entire playoffs. Think about that for a second. The entire playoffs, including the World Series. Yeah, no more, sorry, bud. You know, we got rid of your rule where the All-Star game counts. Just goes to the team with the best record. They get home field advantage. And man, the fact that the Brewers could get that all the way through. They're four games clear, I believe, right now of Toronto. Whew. And they play together head-to-head. We'll see if that ends up being a World Series preview coming up at the end of this month. But that's something to get ahead of ourselves on. The fact that the Brewers will have home field advantage throughout. Number two, the NLDS schedule. It's extremely friendly this year. So it alternates every year. Who gets an extra off day for the TV window? You know, baseball doesn't want to put four playoff games up against football on a Sunday. So it alternates. It was the American League last year. It's the National League this year. Who gets that extra off day during the DS? Then it goes back to normal for the CS and the World Series. Meaning, when the Brewers, you know, since we're getting ahead of ourselves here, if they're the one seed, when the Brewers play game one of the NLDS here at home, that date, by the way, if you want to start marking it in your calendars, would be Saturday, October 4th. Sunday's an off day. Which then means they play on Monday, the 6th, another off day for the travel day, and then you're only back-to-back of the DS, the 8th and the 9th. That would be in the road city. And then if you have to come back, another travel day, the 11th. Meaning the Brewers won't need to play three consecutive games until the NLCS, which helps the bullpen, which helps the starters, which means you only need three starters for the NLDS this year. That's something to keep in mind. two more things to get ahead of ourselves here. Isaac Collins, Rookie of the Year. I'm going to keep banging this drum, man, because my goodness. I mean, Augustine Ramirez is good. Drake Baldwin is good. I just think Isaac Collins is better. And I see him every day. I don't see Drake Baldwin every day. I really liked what I saw from Augustine Ramirez. I can't give it to a DH. I know he catches like once a week. He's a DH. I can't do that. I'd give it to Drake before I give it to Isaac. But again, I'm giving it to Isaac Collins because he's playing Gold Glove caliber. Like, he's going to be a finalist as a rookie who was learning left field in spring training for the Gold Glove Award. Think about that for a second. You're just doing anything you can to stay in the big leagues. You perform, you stick around, you show off your plate discipline, and now you're almost a three-win player. 2.9, according to Baseball Reference. He's at a .288 batting average. He won't be a qualified hitter by the end of the year. There's not enough time for him to get enough plate appearances. He's at 331 PAs. You need 512. So I guess technically maybe. I mean, that's everyday playing. He's about to go on the paternity list. But nearly a 345 player, right? But he's 288, 384, and then 448 and an 833 OPS, 833 OPS, a 134 OPS plus. 34 points above league average as a rookie. He's my Rookie of the Year. It's got to be. It's got to be. My last one, let's get ahead of ourselves here. Christian Yelich. I think this is one of the best Christian Yelich seasons that's gone under the radar. I know the standard has been ruined by what we saw in 18 and 19. But a reminder, Christian Yelich right now is hitting .266. Late May, he was in the buck 70s. Pretty impressive what he's been able to do the last 2.5 months. Furthermore, 344 on base, 456 slug, and 800 even OPS. He's got 23 homers and 81 runs batted in. There's a scenario here, you guys, that Yelly gets to 30 and 100. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's a possibility. And if Yelly gets 30 and 100 and is on the best team in baseball, he's going to get top 5 MVP votes, certainly top 10. But look, Ohtani's winning MVP. We know that. PCA has fallen off a cliff lately. He'll get it back soon. He's still a really talented player. The rest of the National League, Kyle Schwarber's been incredible. I think he's my runner-up right now. But the rest of the National League is just kind of like, who else is going to be that third, fourth, fifth MVP? Because William Contreras was fifth last year. I think if Yelly gets a 30 and 100 and a 840 OPS, that's a top five MVP on the best team in baseball. That's getting our head of ourselves a little bit. If he gets there, I mean, he's already at 20 homers for the first time since 2019. It would also be the first time he's been at 30 since. Those are his only two 30-homer seasons, 36 and 44. That would be a really cool story. Comeback player of the year, mind you, coming off of back surgery. So that's our little getting ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about little things. So we talk about all the big things. Let's get back to reality of how this team keeps winning games. The little things. Pat Murphy had some serious praise in yesterday's press conference here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. Signing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. We're going to the top of the hour here. You know, Pat Murphy, he's always a great quote, and I really enjoy learning about baseball from him and just the way he views the game and the way he sees his club. Two big moments he points out here, and I'll let him talk about it, and then we'll talk a little more about the situation and how important those were for the ultimate grand scheme. But just in a grander sense of just why this team ticks is because of the two at-bats that he's going to point out here.
We've gotten accustomed to understanding that things in baseball are going to happen. I mean, they left six guys on base in the first three innings, and they didn't get the big hit in the first three innings, or that could have been a different game. We did get the big hit, and our balls that we hit, some of them went through instead of right at them. So we were fortunate that way. And then when it got to be 6-5, we ball-striked it. We got at least one walk or two walks there. Collins laid down a bunt. He's player, what did he, was he player of the universe or whatever last week? Whatever these things you give out. And then he's willing to lay down a bunt to make it second and third, to force third decision Do you want to walk William or do you want to pitch to Yelich? And that's the kind of thing you want him in. And then those guys are a little more confidence this week. And you know, William came up with a big swing there, and that was terrific.
You know, that was massive. So, again, to set the stage, Brian Reynolds just hit his second homer of the game. It was off Nick Mears. Bottom of the sixth inning in a one-run game all of a sudden. Remember, you have a fresh bullpen. Like, you're not worried because you know you have Koenig, you know you have Uribe, you know you have McGill all available. But then a leadoff walk on a seven-pitch at-bat, PA, I should say, to Joey Ortiz. Yeah, that's Brewers-y. Sal Frelick, 10-pitch battle. He also draws a walk. And he tried to bunt on the first pitch. It was a 1-2 count, 3 pitches into that plate appearance. And he worked it to 10 to draw a walk. If that's not Brewers baseball, I don't know what is. And then, like you heard Murph say, Isaac Collins has been on top of the world the last month and a half. Puts the team first, drops down a bunt, moves the runners to second, third. It's a one-run game. Got to get another run across. Just do whatever it takes to get another run across. And then William Contreras, with 2 strikes on him, single through the right side, scores 2. Brewers never looked back. They scored 6 unanswered. That's massive, right? That is how this team continues to win. Again, I said it earlier. I'll say it again. The Cubs lost today in a one-run game, and they're going through it. I'm not trying to kick the Cubs while they're down. And I was in Toronto on Tuesday night. I watched this team just squeeze with white knuckles anytime there's a runner in scoring position. This team, the Brewers, they are the exact opposite right now. They are expecting to come through. And quite frankly, if for some reason that player doesn't come through, they know the guy behind them will. That is such a hard team to play against, right? And then furthermore, you know, later in the game, so Contreras has already got 2 ribbies, right? He comes up with the bases loaded, 1 out. He's working a battle against Cam Sanders. He gets ahead of the count 2-0. Takes a daddy hack, whiffs. You know, could have gone south there. Could have kept trying. Oh, I missed a pitch hit. I got to get. Nope. Worked the count 2-2. Fouled off another. Took a pitch in the dirt. Ball 4. After a 2-0 big swing, when he missed his pitch, he didn't get bigger. He didn't go, oh, I got to get it back. I got to go get mine. No, he didn't. He got his with the bases loaded, walking an RBI. Set the stage for Christian Yelich to add in 2 more runs batted in, who had a tough day battling with Bill Miller behind the plate yesterday with his strike zone. Right? Little things add up to big things. It's such an easy concept to grasp, but infinitely harder to execute. What the Brewers are able to do right now offensively, it's not this easy. But the reason why they are such a talented offense is because they're making it look easy. Everybody in this lineup is hitting. Everybody. It's not going to be that way for the rest of the year. It's not going to be that way in October either. The point being, the Brewers have found ways that, you know what? Maybe we're not hitting. Maybe it is that 45-degree day, windy, chilly. Hey, guys, we're built for this. No big deal. Or wind's blowing out. Cool. Can hit homers as well. The Brewers are such a dynamic offense because of the ability to do the little things. And I've said it over and over again. I'll say it again. You should sit down, if you are a youth baseball softball coach, you should sit down with your team and just watch a Brewer game together. Pause it, rewind it, do whatever you got to do, and just see something that, hey, this is something I told you in practice, right? They're doing it in the big leagues. The big leagues. It's so fun to watch this brand of baseball. So again, enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it. It is really fun to watch quality baseball. Speaking of quality, let's go talk to Joey Ortiz. Play that conversation that we played on Saturday in case you missed it. Talking a little defense from Joey O and talk a little defensive metrics as well. Back after this on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Petronio. Your broadcast schedule coming up this weekend against the Reds before we hear from Joey O. 5:40 tomorrow night and Saturday night. We're on the air at 5:05. And then 12:40 on Sunday, which means no Brewers warm-up for yours truly. But We will be with you for postgame for all three of these games. And we'll be in Chicago. Yes. Making the trip down. Can't wait to bring you some content. The doubleheader Monday. We'll have a postgame after the second game. We'll have warm-up before the second game. We'll have warm-up before Tuesday's game and postgame. We'll have warm-up before Wednesday's game and postgame. And then no postgame Thursday, but we will have Brewers Weekly right back here on WTMJ. So looking forward to get down the friendly confines. Now, Joey Ortiz, he made some great plays this week, man. Again, I think the best shortstops make difficult plays look routine. And the numbers are split on him. And again, defensive numbers, I was talking about this with a member of the front office the other day, of just about the Brewers' internal defensive grading versus the external. Like, how far apart are they? And they're like, dude, they are so far apart. There is something messed up with DRS and outs above average and that sort of thing. Like, outs above average is fine as a counting stat and nothing further. Think of it as like triples. Like, cool, you hit a triple. But it's odd that Joey Ortiz is a -2 defensive run saved, but a +8 outs above average, whereas Bryce Terang is a +7 defensive run saved, but a -3 outs above average. Like, that makes no sense. And the Brewers front office representative assured me the Brewers internal system does not grade them that harshly or that split. They know that they have two elite defenders up the middle. So let's pick the man's brain, Joey Ortiz, talking about his defense.
Joey, let's talk a little defense here, man, because I was looking at your numbers the other day, and it's kind of funny to think that you're approaching 1,000 innings as a big league shortstop. You already had 1,000 innings as a big league third baseman. Just in your first 2 years, you know, full time of the show, how has this, you know, gone? Learning third last year, now kind of back to a natural spot at short.
Honestly, I'd say it's pretty hard. I mean, of course, in the big leagues, you want to make outs, do anything you can to get outs for the pitchers. So I think going to third last year was a little bit of a learning curve early, and then later I felt a lot more comfortable. I think early this year is kind of the same as well. And I mean, I played short coming up pretty much my whole time in the minor leagues, split time other places, but it was mainly a shortstop, and then got here and it was a completely different ballgame. I mean, I think big league shortstop is it's a hard position, so I mean, you got to be able to put the work in and be ready for it.
So we watch you in spring training, we see the hands, and you know, people are always asking, can Joey learn short? You know, obviously everyone talked about Willie all year long and all that, but that's all behind us now. What are the challenges that you were making sure you wanted to accomplish just going back to shortstop?
A lot of it was like my first step stuff, making sure that I was getting the balls that I should get, being in a good position to field the balls. I mean, really just that. I think my hands were, I feel like my hands have always been good enough to play anywhere, and I think a lot of it was just making sure I use my feet correctly to be in a good position.
What have you learned about all that with Matt Erickson and the work you guys do on a daily basis?
He does a lot. I mean, he's the one who brought it up to me in spring, so when we started to get working on that, I mean, we noticed a good adjustment early, and then even now I feel like it's getting better. And I mean, hopefully it gets even better towards the end of the season and then going into hopefully playoffs. And yeah.
Joey, you know, Matty also talked about the fact that he could have had like a soft challenge to you of like, you make the routine plays, but wanted to try to push you to make some of the more extraordinary plays. So, and you've been making them lately. So the few plays that pop up are like the Julio play or the plays in LA. Is there a play that since that challenge has come about saying, like, oh, I didn't know I had that in me, or just sort of like, yeah, this is exactly what he's talking about?
I think it was more so like kind of just seeing like he brought it up, and then seeing the more range I had, the more balls I could get to. And I felt like it was always in there, but I just felt like I was late all the time. So when he brought it up, I just made the adjustment and still working on it, honestly. And we've noticed that it's helping out a lot.
What have you felt coming forward? You know, some of the numbers, if we look at the advanced stuff, at least on the public-facing stuff, you coming in on a ball, is you're one of the best shortstops in the league at doing that. So is it bare hands? Is it the transfer? What makes you so comfortable in that? And maybe even, if I could, you know, suggest, like, is it because of third base a little bit last year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think third has a lot to do with it. I mean, you're coming in on the ball a lot, and I think more so just has to do with being aggressive, not letting the ball, you know, take advantage of you. You want to go get the ball on the hop that you want, and I think a lot of it is just being aggressive towards the ball.
He's been fantastic in that front. He has been somebody the Brewers trusted to play everyday short. I know there were some offensive struggles early, but he's showing signs of breaking out of it again. So you'll always have a fan of Joey O fan club right here. Big fan of that dude. I think he's a heck of a ball player, and the best is yet to come for him. So really excited what the Brewers can see out of him the last month and a half. Let's talk about this series, staying in the division, the Cincinnati Reds. Our last segment up next on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Last couple of texts here at the buzzer. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. PCA 074 in August. That's me doing the puking emoji sound. Yeah, it's been tough for him. Look out. He might get hot against the Brewers next week. Another moment of joy from the 608. Listening to the Cubs lose today really adds to this special season. I'd recommend it. I often listen to them lose while we win. What could be sweeter? From Cherry in the Dells. Appreciate it. Got a good question here from Greg in West Dallas. When you talk about Brewers baseball, by fouling off 5, 9 pitches, whatever, can that be accomplished intentionally or by poor swings at strikes? I think it's a mix of both, where you're not doing it intentionally, but it's more of like, hey, pitcher made a quality pitch. I've committed to swinging, but I'm going to fight it off, right? That's the intentional part where it's like, I can't get good wood on this. I'm just going to fight this one off and live to find another pitch. Or sometimes you miss a pitch. Like you get a good pitch to hit, you get too excited and you foul it off and foul it straight back. That happens too. But I think the ability to adjust your swing, to adjust pitch to pitch and to adjust your looking for, and fight it off. Like, all right, let's get another one. And mistake, bang. And that's what happens. Good question, though. Appreciate that one from Greg. All right, again, Reds matchups. TBD still for tomorrow for the Brewers pitcher. Granted, we saw Tobias Myers throw 2 innings yesterday. Kind of takes him out of the assumed running to start the game. You know, the Brewers talked about trying to stretch him out, but now he's in the bullpen. Does he go back to AAA? Do you call somebody up? Logan Henderson's on the IL. Is Chad Patrick coming back up? Is Mizorowski going to start on a shorter outing? So let's operate like it's Mizorowski, because tomorrow is the first day he's eligible to come off the IL and have it be a shorter start on purpose. Do you piggyback him with a DL Hall and an Aaron Ashby and see where you're at? That could be happen, but they're going up against the right-hander, Nick Martinez. Then Quinn Priester against Zach Littell on Saturday, and then Sunday, Jose Quintana and Andrew Abbott. He's been fantastic for the Reds this year. And real quick, if it's Miz, and however you want to play this on Monday, it kind of depends, you know, what you do. Remember, you can get a 27th man for the doubleheader on Monday. Could that 27th man be a pitcher? Could that be Chad Patrick? And then Freddie Peralta would start one of the other games of that doubleheader Monday. And then it would be Brandon Woodruff on Tuesday. And this is not official. This is me projecting. Could be Miz on Wednesday and then Quinn on Thursday. Could. We'll see how the Brewers shake things out. We will be talking to you tomorrow after the game. Mind you, it is on Apple TV Plus, but there's that WTMJ option right there if you're watching. So syncs up for you. Our producer has been Brian Kelly. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.